DW Africa Link.
Hello and a warm welcome to Wednesday's edition of Africa Link with me, Assumpta Latus.
And me, Zipporah Nyambura. We would also like to welcome those of you listening to us on our Facebook page, DW Africa. While there, please leave us your comments and tell us what you think about these stories.
In the next half hour, we'll be going to Nigeria, where President Muhammadu Buhari and his top challenger have signed yet another peace accord ahead of the vote.
We are hopeful that this is evidence that we are all maturing in our disposition towards electoral outcomes.
The family of a Kenyan activist who was found dead called for an autopsy, fearing for an abortion cover-up from the police.
This is not the first time that an activist has disappeared in Nairobi and found dead or maimed or even injured. So most people are saying that they do not believe what the police are saying.
Plus, what is happening on Brexit? But first, let's hear what's happening around the globe.
DW News.
I'm Shay Marnicki with DW News. Leading presidential candidates Muhammadu Buhari and Atiku Abubakar have joined other Nigerian candidates in pledging for a peaceful election ahead of Saturday's vote in Africa's most populous country. Their pledge comes as the top two parties accuse each other of plotting to rig the election. Buhari, who seeks a second term, vowed for a free and fair election.
There had been a lot of fears and anxieties from within and outside Nigeria about the future of our country. We are hopeful that this is evidence that we are all maturing in our disposition towards electoral outcomes.
More than 70 presidential candidates are vying for the presidency. In South Africa, thousands of people have staged nationwide protests against high unemployment and deepening poverty. Dressed in red T-shirts, nearly 2,000 people demonstrated in Johannesburg, and another 6,000 protested in the southeastern port city of Durban over South Africa's 27% unemployment rate. Trade unions claim nearly 10 million people need jobs. The family of a prominent Kenyan human rights activist has demanded an autopsy after police claimed Tuesday that she had died of a botched abortion. Carolyn Mwatha fought against police brutality and extrajudicial killings in her country. She went missing last Wednesday and was found dead Tuesday by police at a Nairobi mortuary. Wilfred Ola, coordinator of a community justice center, has demanded answers.
We want that postmortem to be done today. And after the postmortem, we are calling for a public inquest to find out what led to the death of Caroline Mwatha Ochieng.
Police have arrested six people in connection with her death. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. German federal prosecutors said on Wednesday they have arrested two former members of Syria's secret police for suspected crimes against humanity. Prosecutors said federal police arrested the suspects in Berlin and in the southwestern state of Rhineland-Palatinate. A third man was arrested in France as part of the joint investigation. Cameroon opposition leader Maurice Kamto has reportedly been charged with rebellion and insurrection. The former government minister was arrested late last month after claiming he had been cheated out of the presidency and elections marred by violence late last year. Kamto's party had slammed the election win by veteran leader Paul Biya, who allegedly won with 71% of the vote. And finally, a Kenyan police official says a small plane has crashed in the country's west, killing all five people on board, including three Americans. Police said the pilot was Kenyan and the nationality of the other passenger on board has not yet been established. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
Welcome back to the show, and we are broadcasting live from Bonn, Germany. And today you are with me, Assumpta Latus, and
I am Zipporah Nyambura. It's a pleasure to have your company there on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Lamin Bajie says he's listening from Gambia, and we have Monju Iranians listening from Cameroon, and of course, one more from Ghana, Umar Yakubu. Tell us what you think about the stories we are covering, Nigeria and many more.
Yes, and we kick off in Nigeria, where the country's President Muhammadu Buhari and his top challenger Atiku Abubakar have renewed a pledge of peace ahead of a vote planned for this Saturday. The election campaign period has been marked by heated accusations that have alarmed some observers.
President Buhari, who seeks a second term, and former Vice President Atiku Abubakar have vowed to contribute to a free and fair election in Africa's most populous country. They have also promised to refrain from religious incitement or ethnic profiling. Isaac Mugabi has more.
Past elections in Nigeria have been marked by deadly violence, though the previous vote in 2015 was relatively calm. It saw the first defeat of an incumbent and the first democratic transfer of power between parties as well. This year, the campaign period of the top two parties was characterized by accusations of vote rigging. With just a few days left before the vote, troubles have multiplied. Nigeria's Electoral Commission reported that one of its offices had been burned down with more than 4,600 smart card readers meant to be used on election day. This is the third such fire in the past 2 weeks. Speaking at the accord signing today, President Buhari had this to say.
There had been a lot of fears and anxieties from within and outside Nigeria about the future of our country. We are hopeful that this is evidence that we are all maturing in our disposition towards electoral outcomes.
And Buhari's contender, Atiku Abubakar, had this to say.
As representatives of our party and people, may I freely quote the words of former President Goodluck Jonathan, which remain a benchmark for me, taking into account the deep feelings that prevail as February 16, 2019 approaches. And I quote, and he said, "My ambition is not worth the blood of any Nigerian."
The signing of the accord happened only a day after four people were crushed to death in a stampede at an election rally in the southern Nigerian city of Port Harcourt, River State. This particular state is seen as one of the potential hotspots of electoral violence. In recent days, Nigeria's security forces have pledged to do their best for a peaceful election. Police this week said they would detach officers accompanying top officials to free them up for wider duty and to avoid any undue advantage.
Isaac Mugabi reporting. Now, we ask on our page, Facebook page, DW Africa, whether Buhari and Atiku could be trusted on their pledge to ensure that the election is free from violence. And Madueke, you're saying, I wish them luck because it's a win-win for both Buhari and Atiku.
A skeptical Hassan Trawali says politicians are good at saying things, but not good at standing by it.
Wow, that's your opinion. Let's move to the UK now, where the Brexit pot is boiling. As time ticks down to Britain's scheduled departure from the European Union, the British government is still grappling on how to best say goodbye to the EU.
Earlier today, the European Research Group, which represents around 50 Brexit headliners in Parliament, said it will not vote for the government's motion on Brexit tomorrow night. This comes as German Chancellor Angela Merkel cautions that there is still a bit of work ahead in trying to agree upon an orderly exit. But here's von Wedelstedt reports.
At a news conference, German Chancellor Angela Merkel said she would take more measures necessary for an orderly Brexit. But she also made clear that the scope for negotiation is rather limited.
We, and I think I can speak for both of us, feel responsible to do everything for a deal, but it must be a fair deal and one that works in practice. And unfortunately, we still have work to do.
At the same conference, Luxembourg's Prime Minister Xavier Bettel stated that he sees no scope for further discussions.
I believe that the result of these negotiations is the best possible result. It's impossible to find a better result. It surely is no win-win situation, but it's the best we could do, and for Luxembourg it remains clear that no matter how things continue, the integrity of the internal market is very important.
The only certainty of this moment seems to be that Theresa May's struggle for an orderly deal is going to remain complicated for as long as each of the different parties involved are not sure about what they want.
Matthias von Wedderstedt with that report. We now head back to Africa and this time to Kenya. The family of an activist who went missing for a week before turning up dead is finding it hard to believe police claims saying she died of a botched abortion. They have also demanded an autopsy in order to get the truth about her death.
Caroline Mwata went missing last Wednesday, prompting Amnesty International to raise the alarm over her disappearance. Caroline has been working on a case that involved extrajudicial killings by police. So why are Kenyans not believing what the police has just reported? I put that question to our correspondent in Nairobi, Andrew Wasike.
This is not the first time that an activist has disappeared in Nairobi and found dead or maimed or even injured or arrested. So most people are saying that they do not believe what the police are saying unless they release the phone records that police claim to have, which show the correspondence between the doctors, Caroline's husband, detailing a plan where they wanted to carry out the abortion. Caroline was very vocal about police brutality, especially in Dandora slum, where so many youths have been killed by police, and police always say that, you know, these were robbers and all that. But Caroline had gone out of her way to show that the youths in Dandora slums were being killed by police who were sort of trigger happy. And this made her a target.
And these extrajudicial killings, they weren't unpunished. Why is that?
This is Kenya, I would say, and corruption has always been our worst problem. So if you check, there's a new 69-page report which was released by Human Rights Watch saying that Kenyan police and the military are harassing and intimidating rights activists. This report says that corruption has played a very major role in seeing police who commit extrajudicial killings being brought to book. Especially when you go to the estates, the police are the main law enforcers and they are feared by many, and these guys are untouchable. And this is what Caroline Mwatha was trying to fight.
So do you think now that many activists who are trying to get the truth out there, are they going to be successful in that?
Honestly speaking, as a Kenyan, I would say that I don't think much will be done. Okay, Amnesty International has come out strongly. Human Rights Watch, Kenya National Human Rights Commission have come out strongly. Activists on Twitter, on social media, they have come out strongly. The problem is if the guys who are high up, this is the Inspector General of Police, those top people, if they don't do anything, then this will just be like all the other cases, because this has happened before. Activists have rallied together, people have gone on the streets and protested, but nothing has been done.
I was speaking to our correspondent in Nairobi, Andrew Wasike. Now, Zippy, this is quite hard, isn't it?
Yeah, it's difficult, especially for the family and the husband who works in Dubai and was away and just learned about her death when he was away. So, and we also have lots of feedback as well on our Facebook, because there are many people who do not believe what the police are saying. Mm. Muthoni Waithaka says the police says one thing and the family says another. So who knows?
And Nanji Everest Onyekachi, you're saying that African police officers, I mean, you are generalizing all of them, are lying machines. Well, it's your opinion, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And Edwin Ngang is saying an autopsy conducted by a neutral institution can reveal the true cause of her death or her demise. Yeah.
And you, Abraham Kaya, you're saying that is African process of putting out heroes or genius. Africa's way of governance system of eliminating is not really a good thing, is it?
Yeah, I hope the truth will be found out, whether it was actually a botched abortion or something else.
Yeah. And Stephanie Russell, you're saying that, well, something is not right here. And this is what we're saying. Something is not right. I think the truth has to come out.
Yeah, for sure. We also want to get your views here on DW Africa. Welcome back to DW's Africa Link program, coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And I am Assumpta Latos. We would like to thank all of you listening to us through our Facebook page and our partner radio stations all over the world and from wherever you're listening to us.
Yeah, and we have a lot coming up in the next 15 minutes. Like, how challenging is it to date someone from a different race in South Africa 25 years since the end of apartheid?
Well, I think whenever we go out, you do get quite a few looks.
It's almost like, oh, well, you dating black guys because you can't get a white guy, which is so offensive on so many levels.
Ooh, looking forward to hear about how interracial love is faring on. But first, we head to Ghana, a country that has been in the forefront in the German-Africa business partnership. Germany has now declared Africa a major trading partner and is encouraging companies not to shy off from investing in the continent.
In the third German-Africa Business Summit, which ended today in Accra, both business and government leaders agreed that a mutual economic partnership will benefit thousands of young people in search of jobs. One such partnership is that of Knauf Group Company, a leading construction company from Germany, which is now operating in Accra. Here is Isaac Kalechi with that report.
I am at the Knauf Construction Company in Accra. A dozen young men are busy fixing structures and building partitions using equipment and building materials imported from Germany. Knauf is one of the leading German companies which has invested in Ghana. Apart from creating jobs, it is also training hundreds of young people in jobs like architecture, civil engineering, and building craftsmanship. The director, Stephen Entry, tells me their priority is to create jobs for the youth.
We want to train Ghanaians to give them this capacity to be able to do these installations wherever and whenever they are. Housing deficits in Ghana is projected to be 1.7 million. That means as the economy grows, we're going to have to put up more houses. As we put up more houses, you're going to need the services of these installers. We can train Ghanaians to do it and really bring unemployment down.
The young people say working at the facility has significantly transformed their lives.
Yes, it's important because if you can't work, if you have this one, any place you go, you can work. It has helped me a lot because now I can do any this thing. If somebody give me a job to do it, I will do it 100% because of this training.
It's very important because if a young boy and you don't have any handwork, where are you going? And if you have handwork like this work, you can go anywhere.
Factories and centers like this one show the crucial role Germany is playing in growing economies of most African countries. The European giant continues to encourage German businesses to invest in countries like Ghana. There are about 70 German-owned businesses already operating in Ghana and giving opportunities to locals. This week, Accra is hosting German investors for the third German-African Business Summit. A bigger platform is being created to encourage more German businesses to invest in Ghana and Africa as a whole. Germany's Development Minister, Dr. Gerd Müller, says the focus of Germany is to empower countries like Ghana to create jobs for its people.
Ghana is a stable democracy and a pillar of stability in the region. Your country is a reform partner country and a compact with Africa partner country for Germany. As part of these partnerships, we support your policies, Mr. President, for stronger economic performance.
Already, some deals have been sold in Accra at this summit, with the setting up of a German desk at one of Africa's biggest banks, Access Bank, to create financial support services for German companies operating in Ghana. African countries still have a lot to do to meet the job demands due to the growing young population. Business analysts agree investors like Germany and its affiliate institutions will be crucial in making this a reality.
That was Isaac Kalechi reporting. And Zippy, this is quite interesting. We're having lots of comments here about this story as well. And I have one, my favorite, Etta Major. You're saying, from French Africa Summit to German Africa Business Summit. Who are they fooling? Our old leaders or the youth of Africa?
That's a very skeptical listener there.
Yeah.
And we have Edwin Gang. This must be a Ghanaian because he says Ghana is a new African pride. Great democracy, political stability, social cohesion, youthful and educated working population,
ooh,
and a steady growing economy. Ooh. That sounds like a patriotic Ghanaian. And you can also tell us what you think about this partnership on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
On the spot.
And now to other matters about love. Should I say this is about love?
It's about love. And remember, tomorrow is Valentine's Day.
All right. Let me go to the point. Mm. Interracial marriages have increased globally in the past years. In fact, chances are you know someone in an interracial relationship or you are in one yourself.
Yeah, now in South Africa, dating someone from a different race can be complicated. 25 years after the end of apartheid, perceptions towards blacks and white dating have not changed much. As DW's Seton Anderson's report from Cape Town, the Rainbow Nation is still reeling from a system that kept different races separate, not just in schools, workplace, but also in the bedroom.
Love is in the air. Love is in the air. Every sight and every sound.
Love is in the air in South Africa. And Cape Town is the place to be, not just for tourists. The city at the Cape of Good Hope is teeming with couples holding hands. Among them are two 19-year-old lovebirds, Gabby Herlin and Tsepo Chipu. They've been dating for 2 years and recently moved in together to study at the University of Cape Town. Gabby is a white South African, Tsepo is black. Their interracial relationship still draws some attention in public, even 25 years after the end of apartheid.
Well, I think whenever we go out, let's say to like a nice restaurant, and most of the time it's a lot of white people, so we walk in.
You do notice people that like check us out or whatever. But I think, like, I mean, it's almost been 2 years, so, you know, it's kind of, I'm so used to it.
Tsepo and Gabby are part of the so-called born-free generation, young South Africans born after 1994. As a young interracial couple, they didn't witness the apartheid era for themselves and only know about its horrors through history books and stories from family members. During apartheid, dating or marrying across racial lines was unthinkable and banned by law. Today, couples like Gabby and Tsepo are proof that South Africa is slowly overcoming some of its darkest chapters. But interracial dating is happening among other generations as well. 37-year-old Kirsty von Gogh is a project manager for an initiative that promotes child literacy across Africa. Kirsty has dated several black men and has befriended their families during those relationships.
I sometimes have this impression from some white guys my age. They're almost disparaging about it, and it's almost like, oh, well, you dating black guys because you can't get a white guy, which is so offensive on so many levels.
Paula Quincy is a relationship coach and author who works closely with interracial couples to help resolve their problems. She believes that any couple can overcome their challenges, but that interracial love often comes with its own kinds of trials and tribulations.
It just adds another layer of complexity because you are going to have external factors where people outside of your relationship don't necessarily know what you know. But if the couple is willing to work through it, if they're willing to meet each other in the middle ground, there's no reason why they can't be a success together.
That report was compiled by Seton Anderson and Assumpta. I think it sums up everything.
It does. So, by the way, do you know anyone who is dating a white guy?
The thing is, my point is, this
shouldn't be happening today. I mean, today, you're white, you're black. I mean, it doesn't really matter. I mean, I wouldn't have any problem dating as a black person dating a white guy.
And Anderson actually wrapped it and he said it's 25 years after the apartheid and it's still going on today. Racism, can that stop?
Living Planet Africa.
And now we're going to Rwanda. 10 years after the government of Rwanda banned the use of plastic bags, the country is set to go on notch higher. A law has been tabled that will see the banning of single-use plastics cups, plates, forks and straws, among other things.
The ban will bring the country closer to its goal of becoming a climate-resilient and low-carbon economy by 2050. From Kigali, our correspondent Nasra Bishumba filed this report.
Rwanda's mission to maintain a clean and healthy environment began in 2008 when it banned the use of non-biodegradable plastic bags and packaging materials. The ban, the second in the world after Bangladesh, placed the country among the top five cleanest countries in Africa. 10 years later, the government is now seeking to go further and ban single-use plastics since there is no efficient way of dealing with such items after they are discarded. The Environment Minister, Vincent Biruta, told me more about why a new law is needed.
With some items, we have nothing to lose if we don't use them, while others, they can easily be replaced. There are items that make people's lives easier, like plastic cups, plates, knives, that are used once and thrown away. But when thrown away, they are taken to rubbish collection sites and we are currently unable to recycle them. In the end, our environment and hygiene are both affected.
The minister also said that people whose business involves single-use plastics will be given time to phase them out. Joseph Habineza is a member of parliament for the Democratic Green Party, which has a strong focus on environmental protection. Not surprisingly, he backs the ban.
I really support that because too many plastics around are hazards to the environment. So if we could have better alternatives, it would be much better because the problem with those plastics, they are not biodegradable. Even if you put them on the ground, they cannot rot. They will stay there forever or for many years. Yeah. So they are harmful to the soil and it's not good for the environment.
Marianne Duhirgwe is a nurse at Kigali Teaching Hospital. She is concerned that the ban could have a negative effect on a population that is already struggling with poverty.
The ban is necessary because we live in a country that protects the environment. However, we also need to look out for our population, which is still very poor. The level of unemployment is very high. Sometimes decisions are made and you just feel that they should be for more developed countries whose populations can sustain themselves.
Under the Beat Plastic Pollution campaign, countries like Kenya and Morocco have banned single-use plastic bags, while others, like South Africa, are taking a more gradual approach, for example, by encouraging consumers to bring reusable bags when shopping. Eritreans use more cloth and straw bags, while according to the United Nations Environmental Programme, Tanzania youth activists are turning plastic bags into mattresses.
That was Nasra Bishumba. That was really, really an amazing story, inspiring story. And I think some other countries could follow the suit.
Some have done, like Kenya, Morocco and Mauritania. So it's happening.
Yeah. And another thing that we wanted to tell you today is Cameroon's President Paul Biya today has turned 86 years. And that is only 3 months after he was sworn in for another mandate. No?
Yeah. And we want to tell everyone. If you'd like to know about Africa's oldest president, just go to our Facebook page, TW Africa. There's an exciting video for you to feast your eyes on while there. And you can also leave your comments.
Yeah, and it's not only about Paul Biya, but it's about some other president, interesting old presidents, you know. So it was really nice having you around. And that's all we had time for. My name is Assumpta Latus.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura.
It was really great having you. Thank you.
DW. Made for Minds.